violinist was Nicola Benedetti. Radio 3 was there for a live broadcast on Monday, and we have a second chance to hear that concert this afternoon at 2. But now, with the time at 1 o'clock, it's time for a summary of the BBC News, read by Vaughan Savage.
Labour is calling for an inquiry into the conduct of the former Defence Secretary Liam Fox to be widened. It wants the investigation by the head of the civil service to also look at the scope for conflicts of interest across the government and the role of ministerial advisers and lobbyists. Dr. Fox resigned yesterday after a week of stories about his working relationship with his close friend Adam Werrity. The new Transport Secretary, Justine Greening, has said she wants to get cracking in the job. She was formerly the Economic Secretary to the Treasury, but replaced Philip Hammond after his move to Defence in the wake of Liam Fox's resignation. France have beaten Wales by 9-8 to win a place in the final of the Rugby World Cup. For most of the match in Auckland, Wales were down to 14 men after their captain Sam Warburton was sent off for a dangerous tackle. Protests against corporate greed and income disparity have been taking place in Hong Kong, Taipei and Sydney, in a movement inspired by the Occupy Wall Street action in New York. Further demonstrations are expected across Europe, including a rally outside the Stock Exchange in London. Finance ministers meeting in Paris say they want to ensure the International Monetary Fund has adequate resources to deal with the global debt crisis. They're expected to agree to a deal to recapitalise the banks and make Greece's debts more manageable. At least 7 people are reported to have been killed during anti-government protests in Yemen's capital, Sana'a. The security forces are said to have opened fire on demonstrators. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has dismissed as absurd American accusations that Iran was involved in a plot to kill the Saudi ambassador to the United States. In his first reaction to the claims, a speech broadcast on state television, he said they were meaningless and wouldn't stick. The weather, the rain and showers across the northwestern UK will spread southeastwards, although southeastern England will stay dry with some fog patches and perhaps a touch of frost. Most places feeling chilly overnight with some scattered showers. The BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
And that was Vaughan Savage. Later this afternoon, the trumpeter Alison Balsam becomes a radio presenter when she introduces the first of 2 programmes in which she shares some of the music and indeed reflects on some of the musicians that have inspired her. The music of Bach, Shostakovich and Strauss are in amongst the mix, and of course there will be 1 or 2 other trumpeters too. Saturday Classics with Alison Balsam begins at 3 o'clock this afternoon here on Radio 3. But next, it's the Early Music Show, introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
For much of the 1400s, one composer dominated the courts and cathedrals of Europe. His music was copied and performed wherever polyphony was practiced, and every other composer of the age was in some degree affected by his work. I'm talking about Guillaume Dufay, whose Magnificat we're hearing now. Dufay was born in northern France, but before he was 21, he was in Italy, moving from court to court in the service of some of the most powerful families. And amongst the most prominent and influential of them all was the Este clan of Ferrara. If you've been to Ferrara, you'll no doubt have been struck by the huge moated fortress that dominates its centre. It seemed extraordinarily grand for such a small city, but then this was the Este Palace. And it was here in 1471 that the first legitimate son of the great warrior prince Niccolo III was crowned Ercole I, Duke of Ferrara. They called him North Wind due to his icy personality. And yes, it wasn't all plain sailing for Ercole. An attempted coup by his half-brother nearly toppled him, and a war with Venice raged for much of his reign. But a good marriage to the daughter of the Duke of Naples connected the Estes to one of Europe's most powerful dynasties. And a year later, the good citizens of Ferrara had something else to celebrate, the birth of their new ruler's first child. Of course, everyone had hoped for a boy, but that would have to wait. The little bundle of joy held tightly in the nurse's arms and presented to the court in May 1474 was a girl. They called her Isabella, which means God's promise. Magnificat by Guillaume Dufay, performed by Ensemble Klemencic. Just a few months after Isabelle d'Este's birth in Ferrara, further north in the Franco-Flemish city of Cambrai, Dufay passed away. His patrons had been popes and princes, and in a career spanning some 50 years, he had defined and indeed masterfully combined the very latest developments in harmony, melody and polyphony. But if his death marked the end of one era, well, Isabella d'Este would help create the next. And it really is striking just how often her name comes up when I'm researching material for the Early Music Show. Isabella would grow up not to be just a powerful woman, but one of the most influential figures in Renaissance history. And beautiful too, inspiring portraits from the likes of Titian and Da Vinci. This extraordinary daughter of the Duke of Ferrara would use her position, her glamour, her considerable intellect and her extreme good taste to forward the cause of an entire cultural movement. No wonder she was dubbed the First Lady of the World. But let's go back a bit. Isabella's artistic tastes had certainly been formed by her upbringing. Her father maintained a chapel which for some years was seen as the finest in Europe, even overshadowing the Vatican. And for more earthly entertainments, he hosted theatrical productions with elaborate scenery and musical intermezzi, and brought to Italy some of the most talented Franco-Flemish musicians of the time, composers such as Agricola, Obrecht, Willaert, Heinrich Isaac and Josquin des Prez. There is neither lord nor king who will have a better chapel than yours if your lordship sends for Josquin, wrote the Duke's talent scout from France. Further correspondence shows that he did, however, have some reservations about employing Josquin. It is true that Josquin composes better than Isaac, he wrote, but he composes only when he wants to and not when one wants him to. And he is asking 200 ducats in salary, while Isaac will come for 120. In the event, it was Josquin who was given the post of Kapellmeister at the Este court. And in honour of the Duke, he produced the Missa Hercules Dux Ferrariae, cleverly weaving into the chant the syllables of the Duke's name. We'll hear part of it now, the Sanctus.
So
Music by Josquin des Prez from around 1500. The Sanctus from his Mass dedicated to Ercole, the first Duke of Ferrara. So Isabella d'Este, the Duke's first child, grew up around music. Everyone seemed charmed by this wise and witty little girl. Not tall and not immediately a beauty, she had a clear rosy-cheeked complexion and a sort of inborn elegance. What's more, she had a prodigious intellect. Her teachers were stunned when she translated works of Virgil or Cicero and committed them to memory, or learned the steps of the latest court dance, embroidered faultlessly, and even held her own with the most distinguished of ambassadors. It was court composer Johannes Martini, though, who was trusted with her musical education, teaching her the lute, harpsichord and singing, in all of which, even taking into account the flattery you might expect to be heaped on such an important pupil, she apparently excelled. Martini isn't too well known today, a Flemish composer who spent his entire documented career at the court of Ferrara, so we'll let his music speak for him. Here's the Clarks Group, directed by Edward Wickham, with Martini's glorious setting of the Salve Regina.
Thank you.
Salve Regina by Johannes Martini, composer and choir director at the Chapel of the Duke of Ferrara from the mid-1470s, and also music tutor to the Este family. Aged just six, Isabella d'Este was betrothed to Francesco Gonzaga, heir to the Marquis of Mantua. He may not have been all that good looking, his portrait shows a rather pudgy face with large bulging eyes, but he was strong and brave, and Isabella spent the next 10 years preparing for her wedding and treasuring the letters and sonnets he sent her. 10 years later, they were married, she just 16 and he 24. She brought a dowry of 3,000 ducats, valuable jewellery, dishes and a silver service. And after the ceremony, she rode through the streets of Ferrara to a grand banquet astride a horse draped in gems and gold. We also know something of the music that may have been performed to celebrate the union. A large volume has survived, which shows the combined arms of the Este and Gonzaga families, and contains 124 pieces by leading composers. One of them is Alexander Agricola, whose motet we're going to hear now. Complex, contrapuntal and rhythmically diverse, it's a sound that marks him out as one of the exponents of the new modern style of the time. Waiting on the mercy of my lady, I will be true with body and soul as long as I may live.
Thank you.
Tendon by Alexandra Agricola from around 1480, performed there by the Ferrara Ensemble, directed by Crawford Young. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping. Isabel d'Este now settled into her new life in the little state of Mantua. She began to remodel the relatively modest Gonzaga musical establishment in imitation of her father's, even asking for her old teacher Martini to be sent to her on loan, along with 12 of the singers for her chapel choir. To lead them, she appointed Marchetto Cara. And when he wasn't doing that, or singing or playing the lute himself, he wrote music for weddings, for state occasions, for intermedi and for private este entertainments. And in so doing, created some of the most refined light music of the time. These two lovely examples show how, even in this early period, Cara could bring out the meaning of the lyrics in his music. Both songs are about love, but in contrasting ways, the second being quite upbeat. Who so desires may flee from love, but I myself will follow it, for now is time for laughter. But first, a more solemn take on the business of amour. If I sit in the shade, love comforts me with a loving voice and dries my bleeding wounds with his white wings.
Thank you.
Carolyn Sampson with lutenist Robert Meunier with music by Cara. Songs like those with a personal, intimate flavour were always popular at court, but it was another, newer form of secular song that became particularly associated with Mantua during Isabella's lifetime. The Frottola was a predecessor of the Madrigal, a song with a series of verses, and as you'll hear in a moment, often a little nonsense chorus, much like the fa-la-las of the English madrigals. In this case, turlaroo, turlaroo. Frottolas could be sung by several voices or by just one, accompanied by viols, as in this one by Bartolomeo Tromboncino. A song by Bartolomeo Tromboncino, Claire Wilkinson with Musica Antiqua of London. In the early 16th century, Tromboncino left Isabella's service and went to Ferrara to work for a woman who'd become, in true pantomime style, the villainess of Isabella's life, Lucretia Borgia. But more about her later. We're going to stay with Isabella for now, as she gives birth to the first of her eight children, a daughter, Eleonora. Not that Isabella would have had to get too stuck into nappies or feeding herself. She had an army of others to do that kind of thing and spent her time in more cultural pursuits, as we've already heard. She also enjoyed making perfumes and decking herself in the finest clothing, like the luxurious fur collars often shown in her portraits. Her dress, though, was simple, individual and stylish, boyish caps contrasting with richly embroidered gowns with plunging décolletage that revealed the nipples, a look that was to be imitated throughout Italy and at the French court. But Isabella's main pleasure was still playing the lute, and she soon began experimenting with other instruments as well, as she wrote in a letter home in 1499. "We have begun to learn the viol," she wrote home to Ferrara, "and we hope that we'll learn well enough so that when we come to Ferrara, we will be able to play tenor to Don Alfonso, our brother." Music for viols from a handwritten songbook compiled in 1502, either in Mantua or Ferrara, gives us a rich cross-section of the music enjoyed by the Este family. While Isabella d'Este's children were still young, in fact, while she was still producing them, the situation in the outside world, however, was not so cosy. Her husband, Francesco Gonzaga, was battling with the French king to stop him taking territory in Italy, and he was captured in his sleep and taken to Venice. Isabella was made regent in his absence, taking command of the city's armies and successfully holding off the enemy until 3 years later a peace treaty was signed and her husband was released. But if she'd triumphed in politics and war, in her personal life, things now took a turn for the worse. Isabella's brother, Alfonso, had married the infamous Lucrezia Borgia, and while it wasn't particularly remarkable in these sort of circles for them to be unfaithful to each other, Lucrezia's choice of lover, amongst many others, was unfortunately Isabella's husband. Well, as you can imagine, the friendship between the two women was considerably strained, and when Francesco began to ill-treat Isabella, she could take it no more. She moved to Rome, and we know that during her stay there, she attended a concert given by some of the Pope's lute players. Jacob Lindberg with a Fantasia from the early 1500s by Francesco da Milano, one of the Pope's most acclaimed lutenists. When Isabella returned to Mantua, she led her city's recovery from a terrible famine, which had reportedly taken almost one-third of the population. Now in her 60s, she continued to make the city into a cultural centre, turning her own apartments into an art museum and, no doubt remembering her own excellent and privileged education, founding a school for girls. She still travelled, visited kings, popes and princes all over Europe and arranged good marriages for her children. Music, however, remained enormously important to her, and we're going to end with a piece that we surely must assume had a particular significance for her, because she actually had the score of it painted in the fresco around the walls of her chamber. It's Johannes Ockeghem's Prenez sur moi.
Thank you.
Prenez sur moi by Ochachem, ending today's early music show, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping. The producer was Sam Phillips. In tomorrow's programme, Catherine Bott will be introducing a concert by the Venice Baroque Orchestra, which was recorded in Vienna and features Handel, Scarlatti and Merulli. That's at the same time, 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon here on Radio 3. And also tomorrow, there's a feast of choral music to look forward to.
In 2009, they came from Vienna, from Hesse, and from Riga. Now for 2011, Let the People Sing returns, a feast of a cappella choral music bringing together some of the best amateur choirs from across the world, and your chance to explore areas of the choral repertoire you've never heard before. Let the People Sing, live from the new studios of Media City in Salford, tomorrow night at 6:30 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, in an hour from now, this afternoon, the music of Bach and Shostakovich and Richard Strauss are among the choices of music made by the trumpeter Alison Balsam, who becomes host of Saturday Classics for the next 2 weeks. You can also hear why she admires the playing of Håkon Hardenberger and Maurice André so much. Recordings by them in this afternoon's programme, which begins in an hour from now at 3 o'clock here on Radio 3. But now there's an opportunity to hear last Monday's lunchtime concert, which we broadcast live from Wigmore Hall in London. It was presented by Fiona Talkington.
When the violinist Nicola Benedetti won the BBC Young Musician of the Year prize in 2004 at the age of 16, she was propelled into instant stardom. Everything from a major recording contract to being dubbed by a newspaper in her native Scotland as one of the top 100 most eligible women of the year. But stardom is perhaps very much in the eye of the beholder, because Nicola has kept her eyes and ears very firmly on the music, and she's now one of the most highly respected performers of her generation. Earlier this summer, she performed with the tenor Andrea Bocelli to an audience of 60,000 in New York's Central Park. Today's lunchtime concert couldn't be more different. A capacity audience of a few hundred people in this paradise of chamber music in the heart of London, and two pieces which are part of the backbone of violin repertoire, sonatas by Brahms and Beethoven, in which Nicola is joined by the Russian-born pianist Alexei Grinyuk. Brahms's lyrical first sonata in the second half of the concert, and to begin, one of the three sonatas Beethoven composed just into his 30s. Drama and discontent in his life and in this sonata, including despair at his ever-increasing hearing problems. The key of C minor throws up a tempestuous first movement, dark and troubled, with even the piano part muttering and rumbling. Beethoven counteracts that with the calm after the storm in a beautiful second movement, while the third is a reminder of classical elegance and wit. But if the first movement was the thunderstorm, the final movement has attacks of jagged, forked lightning. And applause now for the violinist Nicola Benedetti and the pianist Alexei Grinyuk coming onto the stage here at Wigmore Hall to perform the violin sonata, Opus 30, number 2 in C minor by Beethoven.
Thank you.